Good evening. Today's date is January 8th, 2026. It's 5:30 p.m. and the Essential Services Advisory Board is now called to order. Can we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I think we're going to start off with a few oaths of office. So if Mr. McConaughey, Mr. Montgomery, Ms. Ree, Ms. Evans, and Mr. Wolf would all stand, please.
Yes, thank you. I will administer the oaths of office, and if you agree, please state so by saying I do or I will at the end. So I, Ryan McConaughey, Matt Montgomery, Karen Ree, Therese Evans, and Stephen Wolf, a citizen of the United States of America and resident of the town of Ponce Inlet, being appointed to the Essential Services Advisory Board of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, do hereby solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Florida, and the charter and ordinances of the town of Ponce Inlet, that I am duly qualified to serve under the Constitution of the State of Florida and the Charter of the Town of Ponce Inlet, and that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of the board on which I am about to enter, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Congratulations to all, and welcome Ms. Evans to the board.
Thank you.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone, and being our first meeting of the new year, we have to elect a chair or re-elect a chair and elect a vice chair or re-elect the vice chair. Do we have any motions for those positions?
I'll make a motion to have Mr. Cox remain as the chair of the board.
I'll second that.
I'll second him too.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm humbled, thank you very much. And now we have, do we have a motion for vice chair or a re-election of vice chair?
I'll motion if
Ms. Valerian
will take the vice chair seat still. I'll be motion for her to retain that.
And I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Because I should have asked that earlier too. Okay. Well, congratulations, Ms. Valerian.
Thank you.
And Chair, if we would like to take roll, I can do so now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cox?
I'm present.
Mr. McConaughey?
Present.
Mr. Pulver?
Present.
Mr. Montgomery?
I'm here.
Ms. Valerian?
Present.
Ms. Ree?
Here.
Ms. Evans?
Present.
Mr. Wolf?
Present.
We have a quorum with all members present.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to move to adoption of the agenda. Does anybody have any changes to the agenda as presented tonight? Well, then I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda as presented. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Approval of the meeting minutes from April 3rd, 2025. That was our last meeting. Do we have any changes to the meeting notes?
No.
Then I'll move that we approve the meeting notes of April 3rd, 2025 as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. So we are going to move into new business, capital improvements. Chief Glazier.
Good evening, everyone. Jeff Glazier, Ponce Inlet Police Department. For the capital projects and equipment request for the Ponce Inlet Police Department, this is my annual request to replace the oldest vehicle in my fleet. In this case, it'll be a 2021 Ford Interceptor SUV. Currently has 70,000 miles, currently in good condition. By the time we replace it, it'll probably be February of 27. At that time, I'm estimating about 90,000 miles and probably in fair condition, like most of my vehicles at the six-year mark. My goal has always been to have a modern fleet. with the latest safety features, and by replacing the oldest vehicle in my fleet, I'm able to do that. I just remind everyone that my guys patrol for 12 hours a day in this small metal compartment, and so I try to keep them in modern vehicles that run properly and have the latest safety features. Some of the attachments for my report are simply some estimates for costs. Of course, these numbers could change in the next few months, but it gives you an idea of the costs. And within the town, we really have two options. We can purchase the vehicle, or we could lease the vehicle. If I purchase the vehicle, I have to go get three bids from three different vendors. If we lease the vehicle, we can go with Enterprise Leasing. And it's really up to the council, up to the finance director, what shape the town is at the time that we purchase the vehicle. Of course, we could put the money up front for a purchase, or if we wanted to delay and have less money up front, but you have to pay interest, then we go with the lease. And so I always lean on the finance director and, of course, council to determine which way we're going to go. But we do have options. And so that's my capital purchase request.
Does anybody have any questions for Chief Glazier? So do you have a preference, or you don't deal with the financing at all?
No, in terms of purchase or lease, I do not have a
preference. Or thoughts on the benefit of one to the other?
Well, I mean, obviously you're paying interest for a lease, but you don't have to come up with all that capital, the $55,000 up front. I think it's up to the finance director to determine what kind of position we're in at the time and what the best move would be.
Okay. Do we have any citizens who would like to comment on the purchase of the new vehicle? Thank you, Chief.
All right, thank you.
Chief Scales.
Good evening, Chairman Cox, members of the board, Dan Scales, Fire Chief. I have three items before you this evening, and I just want to preface this by saying these are really preliminary budget requests. These are things that we really have had kind of on the back burner for a while that we know we're going to be looking at. What we bring before you in March may look a little different than this, but pretty much you're going to definitely see these items here. And the same thing may hold true for police and public works, that you may see something a little bit different in March as needs are identified. So I just want to preface it with that. I have three items that I wanted to present to you quickly this evening. The first one is replacement SCBA, which is basically an air compressor for our self-contained breathing apparatus tanks to fill our tanks. The current unit is over 20 years old. Parts are finally becoming harder to get, and it just needs to be replaced. We've deferred this request for the last three budget years. This next fiscal year, it needs to go if we can make that happen. Also, it was identified when we did our recent accreditation site visit as something that we need to take care of. So we knew that, but they helped kind of reinforce that effort. The second item is a second set of turnout gear. And basically what this is each firefighter is issued a firefighting ensemble suit. And what's different than 30 years ago when you had a fire, you basically wore that gear forever. And the smoke and the soot and stuff was kind of a badge of honor. Today, not so much. There's a real issue with cancer, toxic chemicals, with all these forms of combustion. So having a relatively minor fire incident doesn't have to be a big structure fire. Could be a car fire, could be a kitchen fire. Anything like that that contaminates the gear has to be taken off. We have a special washing machine where it has to be washed and dried. And it takes that gear out of service. And right now, they don't have a second set. If they're lucky, they can find what we call a buddy gear, something that's got basically the same size as they have. And if they can swap in, they swap in. If they can't, they go without. So what that means is if they don't have firefighting gear and there's another fire, they can't perform. The chances of that happening are small, but they're not zero. So it is becoming an industry standard to purchase a second set of turnout gear for every firefighter. And that's what this request is for. We've also deferred that request for the past couple of fiscal years. So we're asking for that for next fiscal year. And a new request is basically a radio cache. And what this is a set of radios, 800 megahertz radios, that could be used primarily for emergency operations for like during hurricanes or storm events when we deploy extra teams into the community. The best way to communicate with them, especially when the cell towers are down, is through radio. The radios we've been using are at least 20 years old. They're no longer serviceable because the new radio system in the county is going to what's called P25. And when they flick the switch, these radios will no longer work. We were told they would, but of course, as often is the case, reality is different. So we've identified a need for additional spare radios to have, and we will use them. It's not a question of if we'll use them, we will use them. And we have a few spares in the police inventory, public works, and fire department, but they're typically in service when we have large events like this. So we are requesting to purchase about a 10 radio cache for emergency operations. And that is the extent of those requests, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Chief, are the 10 radios you're requesting to purchase, are they going to be the primary radios and the other ones are going to be the backup or spare?
No, these would be dedicated just to emergency operations.
Yeah. Okay.
Because we would not buy a full-featured police or fire radio. There's some features that we just don't need. So they're a little bit cheaper piece of equipment than what we typically would buy for public safety.
I got a question. What's the turnaround time when they do have to get that equipment washed?
It's a good hour to wash it, and then you got to dry it. They could wear it wet, but they typically have to take the gear apart because
you have to air dry it.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Gotcha.
And they do have dryers, but now the manufacturers are really saying we don't recommend that you put them in a dryer because it breaks down the fibers. I know it's firefighting equipment, and you think this stuff is really robust because you're taking it into a fire, but they're so chemically complicated now that it's amazing that sunlight, heat, you know, repeated heat will break down the fibers. So that's why. So, yes, to answer your question, that's about how long it takes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Sure. How many turnout gear suits do you need? How many?
It'll be 15 sets.
Okay.
And Chief, how long does the gear last? Like
10 years.
10 years.
It's a 10-year life cycle. That's
pretty good.
Arbitrary manufacturer NFPA adopted number, and it's an industry standard. So whether we have 100 fires or one fire, it's 10 years. And we do have a rotation schedule now that all of our turnout gear is on.
If you double the amount of turnout gear you have, does it extend the life cycle?
No.
No.
It'll have its own 10-year lifespan. Each set of gear has a 10-year lifespan.
I saw the SCBA piece of equipment. I'm amazed it is still lasting.
Every time the service tech comes, so am I. So, yeah. It's seen better days.
Anybody else have any questions for the chief? Thank you, sir. Now we're going to move on to the South Peninsula Drive sidewalk project. Mr. Lear. And sir, before you speak, is there any citizens that would like to speak about the fire equipment and the presentation by Chief Scales? Okay, thank you. Sorry, sir.
Good evening, board. Board members, Darren Lear, Planning and Development Director for the town. As mentioned, we're talking about the update for the South Peninsula Drive sidewalk project. As you know, the project involves a reconstruction and widening of the existing sidewalk along the entire length of South Peninsula Drive, converting it into an 8-foot-wide concrete sidewalk. Starting in August of 2024, Mark Dowst and Associates began survey work along South Peninsula Drive from the northern town limits to Lighthouse Drive. The town received the 60% design plans in September of last year. We sent comments back to the county in October. We did then receive the 90% design plans on November 18th, 2025, and returned comments back to them December 16th of last year. Volusia County staff is proceeding to prepare the final 100% design plans, with a tentative completion expected by late February 2026. So up next, the following that we put in your agenda packet is a draft timeline. We hope to stick to that, but you don't know how things change. In January, February of this year, we're looking to have one-on-one meetings with property owners on the west side of Peninsula, South Peninsula Drive. Then in March, a public open house for all residents to be held at either this council chambers or the community center. Then in April, a joint meeting of the Cultural Services Board and this board to review the project plans. Then in May 2026, town council meeting to present the final 100% design plans for council review prior to contract bidding and construction. July, construction plans packages to be sent to the town and DOT for review and comments. Then you start moving into October of this year, and that would be construction and CEI bids opening. Then February of 2027, construction contract executed. March of 2027, looking for the construction starting, and then completion of construction in October of 2027. And I think at this point, it's important to point out the history of this project and where it came from. In 2002, this came out of a visioning plan that was done by town council. In 2017, it was included in the bike ped pedestrian master plan. In 2018, there was a feasibility study conducted by TPO. Then in 2019, there was an application for funding. In 2021, town council increased the match of the project to 15% to get more points to go up the list and be awarded the project. 2023, there was a joint project agreement with Volusia County so they could be the LAP certified manager on the project. And as mentioned in 2024, the survey work was started, and then we had all the design phases in 2025. And with that, if there are any questions.
For those who are fairly new to this board, we've been getting presentations pretty much yearly on this last two or three years since we've been in existence. So although there's no purpose for a motion tonight, we're here to discuss or ask any questions that we have on it. I, for one, was pretty impressed by the fact that our city managers or administration are going to be meeting with each and every one of these citizens who could be affected by this, which is very honorable given the nature of this project and getting their input, I'm sure. So I thought that was a huge plus here.
Will that run all the way from Dunlawton all the way to the lighthouse or just
No, it's just from our northern town limits just north of here. Okay. And then it will go to basically to the driveway of the lighthouse.
Gotcha. All
right. Is there a rough estimate of what the project's going to cost?
I think it's 12. No, what was the project? Five? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Four and a half.
Four and a half. Sorry about that.
That's million.
Four and a half million.
Million, right.
Yep.
Right. And the funding?
The funding's through the TPO.
Okay, that's right. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Well, I know this is very important to a lot of people in this this town, so we look forward to seeing how this kind of moves forward, but we're not making a motion tonight. We're just getting information. So thank you for that. Are there anybody in the citizens that would like to make a comment on this? Yes, sir, please come. And if you would, just state your name and your address.
Don Bramlage, 4754 South Peninsula Drive, right in the middle of all this. I know none of you are affected by any of this. That's easy to see. It's hard enough to live on that stretch of the road. You're going to make it impossible to live there. You're going to tear down all the landscaping that you made me put in to get a CO. You're going to destroy my irrigation system. You're going to take down oak trees that you wouldn't let us touch when we built the place. And you're going to severely damage the value of our property. I don't see anybody that would want to live there after this happens. You're going to flood us. We already get water up to the garage. I've been paying taxes down here for 40 years, and I don't think you're good stewards of our money. I mean, have anybody just sat down there and seen what it's like? I'd like to appoint this fine, upstanding citizen to come down and tell me what it's going to do to my property and comfort me that this isn't going to ruin my homestead and my life. And I would consider this an unforgivable event. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Okay, folks, my name is Robert Bullard, 4802 South Peninsula Drive. I've owned my property since 1974. This entire project is nonsense from every perspective. For instance, the survey that was done when I bought my property used a corner that was part of a lot corner that had been set by an individual private surveyor about 3 years before that, measured the distance from the plat down my front property line and set his corner. In 1982, when I decided to build a house, I had a second survey done, and the surveyor said, why don't we use a reference starting point instead of just assuming the one that was at your corner is right. Go ahead and start a survey at the curve in South Peninsula Drive where the curve begins. There was a right-of-way corner or monument, and see where your southeast corner of your property is from that, as opposed to just simply measuring down from an existing corner set by a surveyor who knows how many years originally before. He undertook that and found that based on his survey, my front property line was 5 feet longer than what was shown in the plat. Now, that is an enormous difference between what some private surveyors have done in staking the Wharton subdivision, of which I'm a part, it's an indication of a real problem, folks, with where is South Peninsula Drive's right-of-way. I'm speaking as a professional engineer, civil engineer. Right-of-way is set as the starting point for all land use purposes, all planning purposes. We pick a right-of-way that has a particular roadway and utility opportunity. And then we build everything around the right-of-way. We don't build the right-of-way by building and staking each individual property and giving them a front yard property corner and say that's the right-of-way. It's the reverse. You set your right-of-way monuments. You're very careful about that. You try to use, or at least when I was involved in running a lot of surveying activities 30 years or 40 years ago, you try to use a method, a reference method for your monumentation that is set at 1 to 10,000. That's, for instance, 1 centimeter to 100 meters is 1 to 10,000 accuracy. So unless we have a right-of-way that has been identified and measured at that level of accuracy using the Florida State Plane Coordinate System, which I hope would be the monumentation for South Atlantic Avenue and transfer that monumentation through the existing plats all the way over to South Peninsula Drive at that level of accuracy, which we can do today with our computational capabilities, and set the right-of-way up. I don't think any sidewalks or any other activities that are going to rely on being sure we have our works for the town within the right-of-way and not on private property, or vice versa, private property using our right-of-way and obstructing our ability to do these works. I think that is the number one priority. All the plans for the sidewalk and everything should be back burnered. That survey fully completed and vetted through this process we're in now before we move forward with any plans for a sidewalk. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Do we have anybody else? Yes, sir.
Michael Lang, 4366 South Atlantic. And the presentation was by Mr. Lear, is that correct?
That's correct.
And is he the project manager?
Can someone answer that?
I don't even know. Does anybody know? Who's managing this project? Who's managing this project? Not anyone at this in the town is not managing this sidewalk project. Is that what I'm hearing? I mean, we just had the person up here explaining the project that couldn't tell you the total cost. I find that astounding. Maybe you don't, but it's a lot of money. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name's Nick Amos. I've lived here for 30 years, 4718 South Peninsula Drive. And again, my main concern is drainage, our trees, our beloved trees that, you know, we're not supposed to cut down. I'm fortunate where our house is, the trees touch at the top across to the other side of the road, creating a really nice canopy. I'm concerned about the cost, that we really don't have our finger on how much it's going to cost. And I think that's a dangerous way to go. And I'd really like to have a speed limit enforcement or stop signs, because just getting your mail, it's very risky. With all the people that work in the restaurants, they're late for work or they're trying to get home, and it's 50 miles an hour, 40 to 50, and you just got to be careful. So, and the flooding part, I'm sure we've had an inch of water in our house the last big storm we had, and drainage is an issue. But that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Mark Obeck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive. I'm a simple guy. I really am. And what I have yet to hear is an answer to the question, why? Why are we doing this? What justification is there to do this? What has been the problem? I would challenge this board and everyone to look at the last 15 years of police reports associated with Peninsula Drive. Do you know how many are related to any bicycle or pedestrian incident? Zero. Zero. This vision is 24 years old. Do you think anything has changed in 24 years? Why don't we identify a few things that have changed? What about the advent of e-bikes? What about the change? Yes, we've changed the speed limit on Peninsula. It can be further changed. Stop signs can be put in. My assessment, and My background is in IT solutions, and I always ask, okay, let's define the problem before we identify what the solution is. Well, I have yet to hear what the frickin' problem is, folks. And yes, I live on Peninsula. I get a good storm coming through, and water is lapping up literally against my garage door. You increase that sidewall width, you're going to increase the slope of that driveway, and this town has no plans to mitigate any of that runoff, that flooding that will occur. No plans whatsoever. Do they have any plans regarding any compensation for landowners for the investment they made to make their property more attractive, and yes, the whole route along Peninsula more attractive? Has the town thought of that? Zero. Zero. What about the 40-plus trees that will be eliminated? That's a low estimate. And these are mature trees. They're not little 4-inch trees. These are full-grown trees. And we consider ourselves the tree city? Give me a frickin' break. It's not necessary. This sidewalk is a boondoggle because someone had this idea, well, let's make it look like Atlantic Avenue. It's not going to look like Atlantic Avenue. We don't want it to look like Atlantic Avenue. We don't. We want it to look the way it is now. People are used to walking that sidewalk. I walk our dogs every day. People are used to it. They're used to the traffic. They know what to watch out for. Yes, could there be lighting at nighttime along that, like passive lighting? That would help. But spending $1 million of our funds, our taxpayer money, on a sidewalk, on a solution with no problem? You've got to be kidding me, folks. This town has continued to spend more and more money each year. It's time that we take a firm stand and say, wait a second. This is the Essential Services Board. Essential means it's necessary or required. I don't see this project meeting either of those requirements. It does not. And for this to move forward is a travesty against the citizens of this town, because it's not necessary, it's not required, and it's a damn waste of money, an absolute waste of money. And you're affecting homeowners that have put forward a tremendous amount of work to make that Peninsula Drive look nice as people are going down. You're going to ruin all of that. For what? 2 freaking more feet of sidewalk? Give me a freaking break.
Thank you, sir. Do we have anybody else that'd like to speak on this? And again, I just want to reiterate, this is all informational purposes for this board tonight. We're not making any motions on this. A lot of very good points made tonight by everyone. I took notes. I'm sure others did as well. I believe there's going to be meetings individually with the owners. Obviously, you can share your concerns then before any final decisions are made on this. I believe on April of this year, it's going to be presented to us in a little bit more detail. Is that correct? I see here, Mr. Lear. It says here on April 2026, we're going to have a joint meeting with us and the Cultural Services Board, so we can raise questions then and in our preparation leading into that meeting as well. So I do appreciate everyone's comments today. Anybody else have anything on this topic?
Mr. Chairman, I had one question. Is this proposed work to be done within the city's easement?
You're not
taking anybody's private.
No,
so it's all within the rights of the city.
It's all within the right of way, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you. Ms. Gessing, you're going to do the meeting dates, okay?
Yes, thank you. So staff has provided tentative dates for the Essential Services Advisory Board meetings for 2026. And these dates are subject to change, and there is potential for additional meetings to be scheduled based on projects throughout the year. Staff is also requesting feedback on the board's preferred start time for meetings. We understand that a morning or afternoon meeting may not be the most feasible for all members' available schedules, and if the 5:30 p.m. meeting is still preferred, the board will continue to meet in the evening. Staff would just like to provide an opportunity for board members to discuss if the evening meetings are still most convenient. Any suggested start time change would go off the majority of members' consensus, and it would have to be approved by the town council prior to being implemented. If you have any questions, please.
My only question on the dates, as we just spoke, there's supposed to be a joint meeting on the 26th. I keep saying April 26th, in 2026, sometime in April. Do we want to put that on the calendar?
Yes, so we won't have a confirmed date on that at this time, but we will definitely provide the board with more information when that's available.
Okay. For my fellow board members, I'm pretty flexible. Any time works for me. I know a lot of people are still working. Does anybody have any suggestions on a time? Do you want to keep it at 5:30? I believe a couple boards have moved till 10 or 10:30 in the morning.
Yes, we had one board that moved to 10 a.m., which is what kind of opened this discussion.
Anybody have any input?
I'm unable to meet any time other than 5:30.
I concur.
With my work schedule.
Same here. I mean,
okay, then I'll make a motion that we keep the dates as presented and also keep the time at 5:30.
A second.
A second. Mr. Montgomery, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir, thank you for your patience.
All righty. For those of you who have not met me before, my name is Patrick Brackens. I work with Cliff Shepherd, who you've probably seen around here for a long time. Cliff's been my partner, and I've been with him since 2016. I've had the privilege of attending multiple of your town council meetings, planning board meetings, and some of the fun litigation the town's been involved in over the years. But it's my first time before you all, and so thank you for having me. And how many of you, before I start, so I can keep this as concise as possible, have had this training before? Anybody not had it? All right. That's okay. So a couple of things I'll tell you. I'm not going to cover, however, I think there's 75 pages in here. A lot of the slides are duplicative. I'm not going over all of them. I'm going to hit the high notes. The reason I'm going to hit the high notes is because some of the things I'm going to share with you today will help keep you out of jail for your wonderful salaries that you receive for caring about your community and serving for free. You get to go the opportunity to go to jail if you violate some of these laws. But I'm going to give you my card. What I recommend we do is, if you have any questions, or I know in a group setting when you have other folks that are here, we have some elected officials here tonight, there are no such things as stupid questions when it comes to these issues. But if you're not comfortable with them, give me a call. The number one rule when it comes to sunshine and public records and ethics is, when in doubt, don't. When in doubt, pick up the phone. Call Cliff. Call our office. There are very few people, although it does happen and people do go to jail, there are very few people that ever intentionally violate the sunshine or public records laws. If you do it on purpose, you do go to jail, and people do. A lot of it has to do with appearances. When you have a highly contentious issue like a sidewalk, and someone who is not happy with the direction that you're going or what you might do, and before the meeting you're talking, or after the meeting when you leave and you're walking to your car, that's when people think you're violating it. So the when in doubt, don't is what applies. But let's talk about some of them. Sunshine law first. It's in our Constitution. Both public records and sunshine are in our Constitution, but they're also in the Florida statutes. So the first thing is, when does the sunshine law apply? Or what does it require? It only requires three things. It requires a reasonable notice at the meeting, which you all don't have to worry about. Town staff takes care of that for you. There's no specific rules about how it has to be noticed. It just has to be noticed, and that notice has to be reasonable. The other is, minutes have to be kept. Also not your problem. The next is, there has to be an opportunity for the public to attend, and since about 2013 or 14, you have to have an opportunity for public comment or public participation for any item that you might vote on. In a workshop setting, or for a setting where there are no votes taken that affect public business, you actually don't have to allow public comment. In a lot of workshops, they don't have public comment because no decisions are being made. But nobody ever got in trouble for allowing public comment. So when in doubt, allow public comment. That's all the Sunshine Law requires, but what does it prohibit, or when it applies, what does it prohibit? It prohibits two or more members of the same board from discussing, and that means either orally, in writing, via text, or even through an intermediary, any matter that might reasonably come before your board. Individually, you can talk to any of your elected officials you want anytime about anything. You can talk to any member of the planning board about anything. Members of the code enforcement board, although now you use special magistrates, or member of the cultural services board. You are not members of the same board. Members of the same board are not allowed to discuss any matter that might reasonably come before you or may come back before you. So like the last item on the agenda, you're going to have multiple other times where that comes up. The firefighter equipment, that's going to come up again. So if you're at a holiday party or you're at a restaurant and you run into each other, don't talk about those things. But that's it. That's what, if you intentionally do those things, it is a second-degree misdemeanor. You can be removed from office. I believe it's a $500 fine, and you go to jail for up to 60 days. It happens. It happens every year. About 2 years ago, I think three members of the City of Sebastian governing body went to jail for it and prison for some other things. So it does happen. What I see more, and in my experience what I see more, is the people that get accused of it. And you get accused of it when does the sunshine attach? The public meeting starts when the gavel sounds or you do the call to order, and the meeting ends when you adjourn. All those discussions have to take place between then. Anything before the gavel sounding and anything after, that's the no-no. So what we see, I will give you one very specific example that happened just south of here, but what we typically see is it's the parking lot, it's the talking about your kids or your grandkids and their baseball games, and you're talking over there, and somebody back there thinks you're talking about that issue. But they have to know what it is. So in the city of Satellite Beach, we don't represent Satellite Beach. We would have advised against this, but they had a very hot-button issue about water quality and the Air Force Base. And so they originally scheduled a public meeting to discuss with the Aaron Brockovich's firm, some other experts and members of the governing body and staff about the issue. They ultimately canceled the meeting, and instead it was a staff meeting. It was a staff meeting with the lawyers and the experts for the other side, and one elected official came in and sat in for 30 minutes. At the end of the 30 minutes, they got up, they left. Another elected official came in and sat down and listened, got up and left, and then another one came in. There was no discussion that ever took place between two or more members of the same board during that staff meeting. But through inadvertence or just bad judgment, they didn't cancel the meeting until the day of. So the public came, and they couldn't get in because it wasn't a public meeting. It was a staff meeting. It was an internal meeting. And it would just be like here with the windows. You could see in, but you couldn't hear. And so what they could see were two or more members of the council maybe standing over there. There was another room where the actual meeting was taking place, and they were talking. They were waiting their turn to go in. So they assumed they were talking about it, and they filed a very extensive lawsuit, and we were hired to represent the council members in that lawsuit, but they could never establish what it was they were talking about. And so their argument was the mere fact of listening, that there doesn't have to be a communication, a discussion between two or more members of the same board, if at any time two or more members of that board were sitting in the room listening, they were violating the Sunshine Law. Which would mean if you all went to a county commission meeting and were both in the same room listening to the same thing, you'd be violating the Sunshine Law, and that's ridiculous. But nevertheless, it went through three different complaints. It was eventually dismissed with prejudice. It cost both the town and those elected officials a lot of money to defend against it. But that is the kind of thing that can happen. Not because you do violate it, but because somebody thinks you are. So that does not mean you cannot be good neighbors, greet each other, go to lunch. I don't advise going to lunch with each other. But just always be cautious. And when in doubt, don't. That will keep you safe. With respect to public records, I think by now all of you know your Gmail accounts and your Yahoo accounts are not private if you're discussing public business. Your Facebook accounts, your city, and it is in your packet, has a terrific social media policy. I wonder who wrote it. But it is a terrific policy. So if you are discussing public business on your Yahoo account, that's a public record. It's required to be maintained. You can't destroy it. It can be requested. Public business that will come before your board. What you're supposed to do in that situation is save it, send a copy of it to the clerk. The retention of it is governed by a different Florida statute, but you can't destroy it. It is a public record. It can be requested. Your text messages, city doesn't provide you, well, I'm assuming, with cell phones. Your private cell phone, texting with a member of the public about firefighter gear is a public record. It can be requested. There is no such thing as privacy when it comes to a communication or a document that's prepared and transmitted to someone as a part of your public duties. That is very challenging. There are programs and there's software. I don't think you all probably need to do it, but there's software where you can download all your text messages and it'll save it. Same with your emails. You can create folders. But it does come up and it is challenging. And failure to respond to a public records request, that is, you are both the custodian of your own records as well as the clerk. Even though the clerk is designated as the town's custodian, if you have possession of records, you're also responsible for them. So it probably happens the least in terms of risk, but it does happen. And so if you're posting on your family's Facebook account about your work here, that is a public record. Don't delete it. If you have a social media account dedicated solely to your work here or your involvement with the town or anything having to do with that, your social media account and any comments, especially the comments. People are crazy. People say the most awful things to anyone. They don't care who reads it. If you have a social media account where you discuss your public business and somebody says the most god-awful thing you have ever heard in your life back to you, and it's about that, you cannot delete it. You have to maintain it. So, when in doubt, don't, and when in doubt, call, because some things aren't. In the instance, another example, if you did have a city phone, and let's say your job was you ran a bed and breakfast, and somebody got your public cell phone number and they called to make reservations, is that a public record? No. Has nothing to do with your business, even though it was on a public phone. Same deal if you have a public email account. Somebody emails you about the ball game or the Ole Miss Rebel game that's kicking off at 7:30. That's not a public record, even though it was transmitted on public business. Same criminal penalties apply for the intentional destruction or withholding of public records. It's a second-degree misdemeanor, $500 fine. You can be removed and jailed for up to 6 months. That happens less frequently. But the intent, it's much easier to prove, I would think, to prove intent for destruction than it would be for intent for a unknowing or inadvertent technical sunshine violation. Another way sunshine can be violated, not a good example is probably not for this board. You have to have three members to have a quorum, right? Well, you don't vote on a whole lot of things. You get a lot of reports. But think about somebody like the planning board or the town council where they vote on things. If you know somebody's not, if you know two members aren't coming and it takes three to get a quorum, well, why don't you call your colleague and find out if they're not going to go, because then that controversial item won't happen because you won't have a quorum. I would argue that's a sunshine violation. So even things you might not think are. We do get this. I hope you all don't. Staff, if you do this, it's very inconsequential. So if you've done this, please don't take it as an insult. I have another board that I sit on for Orange County, and every month the clerk sends out an email to all board members asking whether or not they will attend and ask them to please hit reply all. Thankfully, we have 7 members of that board. And every time I say, please do not hit reply all. It's not because that's the most horrible thing that ever happened, and many of them do still hit reply all, but it's just the potential for it. My job is to try to protect you. So things like that can happen. Moving on to...
It's a question before you move on. The social media account, are you saying if somebody just responds to us that we don't reply, it's still a matter of public record? I thought we would have to...
No, the discussion is about sunshine. Public record, somebody emails you...
a question.
That question is public record. If it has to do with your work here in the business, that's a public record.
And how about if we reach out to staff and have questions for them, because to prepare for this meeting individually?
Yeah, that's transmitting a document, the communication itself, to staff about the meeting. That's a public record. But the good news for you is if you email staff, it's retained on their computers and their databases. I'm not telling you to destroy it. I'm telling you don't worry about it, because the town has it, and you're covered.
Well, suppose it's verbal, though, not in writing, but it's only verbal.
Well, that's not a public record.
Okay.
So a public record is a document. It can include anything. It can include pictures, audio recordings, text messages, images, but think of it as a document, anything in a broad sense of the word document. A communication that's just oral, there's no way to document that.
Only that which pertains to business of the city and this position. Okay.
Right. For example, if you called the town clerk and asked what time does a restaurant close, or you emailed her, it'll still be maintained by the town under their retention policies, but if that wouldn't be a public record. Unless, of course, there was something having to do with that restaurant that was coming before you.
What if you get an email and you don't respond to it at all?
Yeah, the transmission of the email to you is the public record if it's about
this.
I've
got to maintain an email that I won't respond to.
So one of the – you all do not have town cell phones, right?
Correct.
Okay. If you had a town cell phone and you had a frequent caller that just left you nasty messages about the work you do, every one of those messages is a public record. And you're supposed to maintain them. So, and there are ways, because with the phones now, they can save hundreds of messages. My recommendation is you come to the clerk, you figure out how they can download them, and they can do that for you. And at the end of the day, that is no reflection upon you. That's a reflection on the person who had nothing better to do with their life than harass you with calls. Think of some. Does anybody else have any questions? Because these are the big ones that wind you in jail. The ethics stuff. You do. We're going to talk about Form 8B and some other stuff. Some conflicts of interest. But since you're not a quasi-judicial board, those are less. The advent of those happening to you or coming up are less important. But sunshine's the big one, and that's what I mean. Every state attorney I've ever met would love to prosecute. Public official for a sunshine violation. That would be an incredible feather in their cap.
I have a question. I'm new, so clearly there's a couple hot topics that came up tonight. If I wanted background on this particular project and I wanted to see the project plan,
can you speak into this?
There's a button.
Yeah.
I think.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so if I wanted to see the project and the project plan and get the history and then ask questions.
Of whom?
Am I simply limited to this once a quarter meeting to have those discussions?
She's referring to staff.
You can talk to staff, but you can't call the chair and ask him for the background of the project.
But with whom do I have dialogue? Because I've got a project management background. I've got a finance background. I've done some things with some theaters as far as construction. With whom can we have those discussions to help understand?
Staff. Staff are not members of your board.
So who specifically on staff can she go to?
You can call Ms. Gustin, you can call Kim, you can reach out to Mike Disher. They can put you in touch with folks, or they can make the report to you as well.
So if I wanted to contact some of the homeowners that came up with some of these issues, could I do that?
Could you do that?
Should I do that?
No.
Okay. And this is why I'm asking.
But that's not a sunshine. That has nothing to do with sunshine. That
right,
has
but,
to do
but,
with ex parte
but what
disclosures.
I'm, what I'm seeing here is we meet quarterly. We vote on things. And, you know, to be able to vote on things, you have to know the details, and you have to have interactive dialogue and understand the risks and the benefits and things like that, as opposed to simply just flipping a coin and saying yes or no on it. And I'm trying to understand, as a new board member, how to get up to speed on all of those kinds of things and have an understanding of, you know, a lot of the detailed background. And you're saying just ask that the
staff's your first point of contact.
Okay.
None of your other members ever. Alternates, regular members on this board, no. You're elected officials.
Okay.
Fine. Let me transition into the neighborhood folks and how that could potentially be a problem. It's not a legal problem that puts you in legal jeopardy, with one exception. When you vote, if you have an issue that you all are voting on, it's legislative. You typically do not have to disclose ex parte communications unless it's a quasi-judicial matter. But if you have a, don't let them buy your lunch, that would be a problem. Do you know the difference between quasi-judicial and legislative? I would not expect you to.
I don't.
Okay. So quasi-judicial, it only applies, and I can't think of a particular instance which it would apply to you all, but I could be wrong. But when a particular regulation of the town is being applied to a particular property, there are certain, they call those, you are no longer sitting as a legislator or in any type of executive capacity, you are sitting as a judge. And that's how it gets this weird name that you have to pay lawyers to come up with, called quasi-judicial. Your planning board. Everything the planning board does, with the exception of comprehensive plan amendments or text amendments to the code, are quasi-judicial hearings. If somebody wants a variance to put up a fence, they come before the planning board for a hearing. That's a quasi-judicial hearing. The law requires that the decision of the planning board be supported by three different things. One, competent substantial evidence. That just means sufficient evidence for a reasonable person to draw a conclusion. The next is you have to give due process, which means you have to allow the applicant to be heard. That 5 minutes doesn't apply. And you have to follow the essential requirements of the law, which typically means the land development code that applies to that variance and any other state law that applies to it. And the board members are supposed to make their decision based solely on what they heard at the hearing. So, in that example, if you were on that board and you went and talked to the landowner or the neighbors, that's outside of that hearing.
Understood.
So before that hearing takes place, those are called ex parte disclosures. To avoid any inference of bias against the city or the town, you have to disclose it before the hearing. Who you spoke to, when you spoke to them, what you generally spoke to them about. And you're not allowed to tell them how you voted. And if you did, you're biased and you can't. You have to recuse and you have to fill out a form. Mm-hmm. That's in the back of your packet. So those types of discussions are what I call ex parte disclosures that happen outside of here. But if you're operating in either a legislative or an executive capacity, which most of the things you do are, you don't do quasi-judicial, you typically do not have to make that ex parte disclosure. But it is not advisable to do that.
Understood.
if nothing else, for appearance's sake. That does not mean you're in the grocery store and somebody comes up on South Peninsula and wants to talk to you about the sidewalk. Listen to them. Be polite, respectful. Cover yourself, send an email to staff or to the clerk and say, hey, I spoke to so-and-so. Just